Welcome to the Educause Review Online Podcast. I'm Jerry Bain. On this podcast, we feature a conversation with host Colin Curry from Princeton University and Carl Grant, Associate Dean of Knowledge Services and Chief Technology Officer for the University of Oklahoma. Grant will be discussing how libraries at Oklahoma's two largest research institutions were able to leverage federal and state directives to produce a thriving partnership in a short time frame. A partnership that resulted in a shared institutional repository called ShareOK.org. Here's Colin Curry.
Please tell us your story, Carl. How did Oklahoma State University and the University of Oklahoma leverage nonspecific directives and strategic plans to create a tangible and funded project?
Well, I think we'd have to call it a perfect storm. There were a number of events that occurred all roughly in the same time period that brought together an initiative that resulted here. And the first one was the governor convened a panel of research experts, and they were to put together a plan to try and bring together a virtual research organization to better support research and higher education across the state. And that was in 2012. And so they put a panel together, and they came up with a number of recommendations, but when I read it, one of the things that really caught my eye was that they really thought something like this should be done and the infrastructure to support it on the basis of a simple MOU, Memorandum of Understanding. And I thought, well, you know, that's a very powerful statement all by itself, because so many times these things require elaborate structures and committees and technical agreements. And this group said, no, let's just do it on the basis of a memorandum of understanding. So I noted that, and I filed that away. And then OU had a blue ribbon panel come in. The vice president of research on the campus convened a panel of experts to look at OU and what needed to happen in terms of the IT support at OU in order to better support research. And again, I got handed a copy of this report when I started, which was in 2013, and went through it. And, of course, one of the things that it called for was the fact that we needed to put in place a digital repository. They didn't have one at that point. And so we had those two events converge. And then the university, OU University's dean of libraries, was retiring. So it was time to take a look at the field and see, in terms of all of these initiatives that were going on within the state, what they could find in the way of a new dean of libraries that would really drive this agenda forward. And they went out and recruited Rick Luce from Emory University and were able to bring him on board. And Rick, if you know his background at all, comes out of Los Alamos National Labs and has a very impressive record in supporting research and has done a great deal of research himself. So he really understands it, and he understood what it would take. So when he joined OU Libraries, then he called me and said, I think I have a job for a chief technology officer here that I'd like you to apply for. And I did, and came on board. And so, you know, we looked at what the library had. And the previous dean of libraries had really built some fabulous special collections. I mean, it's hard to imagine our special collections, how great they are. But we have like all 12 of Galileo's first editions, the only library in the world to have those. Many of these books have Galileo's handwriting on them. I think 5 of them have Galileo's handwriting on them. I don't, you know, for a lot of people, I'm not sure it'd be the same experience for me, but to hold a book that Galileo held and was jotting ideas in is a very powerful experience. We have Darwin collection that is really just top-notch in the world, and so we've contributed many of those digitized collections. But what we really didn't have was a good digitization lab. So all these fabulous works locked up in vaults and on the campus, they could be accessed by students, but really not accessed by the world. And so Rick saw the need immediately to build a digitization lab, which was one of the first steps we took, was to build a beautiful digitization lab, fully equipped, in order to start digitizing these works so that as we put them in a repository, they would become accessible to the world, which was our intent. Not to sell them, you know, copies of them. We wanted to make them accessible to the world. And so we began an initiative. We built the digitization lab. We started digitizing works. And then that was about the time I came on board. And then, you know, I saw the immediate need for a repository as well after reviewing all this documentation. And so we started to put in place a plan to get that repository up. You know, as any good management would do, we looked at what do we have in terms of resources. And we were fairly thin, technically. You know, the previous dean had focused on collections and not technical infrastructure. So looking at that, it became pretty apparent to me that we were going to need to move very quickly in order to realize Dean Luce's agenda, and that we didn't have all the resources we needed to do it. So there were some challenges immediately ahead of me, and I think you'll ask about those in a moment.
I had a chance to look through one of Galileo's telescopes.
Isn't that fabulous?
Yes.
I mean,
really
it is.
Neat.
I went to Chicago, and of course, the planetarium there, Adler, has a whole bunch of his replica telescopes there, and you can look through one of those there, and it's a fabulous experience. I mean, it's really amazing, and compared to what we know as a telescope today, I mean, they're so primitive,
right?
But you know, his background and his study is so powerful. And of course, we're getting ready to launch Galileo's World Exhibition, which is a university-wide exhibition next year to coincide with the 125th anniversary of the University of Oklahoma. This is going to be a truly world-class exhibition. We are working with Galileo museums in Italy to fill this out. We are mounting all of his collections. It's going to be an exhibit that encompasses the law school. We're going to do a version of the trial that Galileo went through. We're going to do musical performances from Galileo's father. We're
going to play the Pope.
I mean, it's the whole bit. But, you know, what we want, really, the goal here is to reacquaint people with the discoveries of Galileo and how they really still today have such a major impact on life. And so this whole repository in terms of the special collections, this isn't even on the STEM side of the house, really, is in part to get these collections online so that people can access them and see, what was this guy all about? What was he doing? Because when you understand the story, and Carrie Magruder, who runs our special collections, is just a fabulous, fabulous curator, and to hear him narrate the story of these works is just, you know, it's entrancing. It is so powerful.
Yeah.
So it's a great thing to do, and it's all, you know, additional reason for us to have this repository up and running, because as we do Galileo's World Exhibition next year, we want people to be able to access these works and look at them and understand what they were about and what they said. So that's just one aspect of what we're trying to do with the repository.
Fascinating. All right, we'll get back to the list, and then
okay.
Maybe at the end you can tell me
Indeed.
How all of this stuff ended up in Oklahoma. Okay, so what role did outside consultancy play in this story?
Well, this goes back to what I was alluding to a moment ago, which was that as I assessed the state of technology and the skill sets that we had on hand, it became pretty apparent to me, given that we really had a short timeline. Dean Luce, I joined in basically the start of April, and he wanted the repository up and running at the end of August with content loaded. That's a pretty short time. Plus, I was doing a new discovery interface at the same time. So I had two major projects to pull off in a very short time frame. So I took a look and said, you know, I think we're going to have to go outside for implementation skills on the repository. And so we did. We got together with OSU. And OSU joined the table early because they were also interested in doing a more powerful repository implementation. And so they had approached us at one of the conferences that happened early after I got to OU and said, you know, if you guys are going to do a repository, we'd be interested in looking at doing it together. Super. You know, collaborative projects are always super. And so our deans got together. And they did a little discussion and said, yeah, let's see if we can't make this work. And so Robin Leach and I took the initiative and got together and said, let's put together a list of our needs, you know, typical procurement process. We put together an RFP, and we issued it out. Looked at three consulting firms that did this kind of implementation work of open source software. And we did have one fairly unique requirement, which was in Oklahoma, there's really a desire to keep data, particularly research data, on state-owned hardware. And so that really put a requirement in there that a lot of the firms wouldn't meet. They either wanted to load our repository in Amazon's services there, or else to load it on their own machines. And we just weren't comfortable with that. So we had to have it done on our own hardware. And there was one firm that would do that. And so we contracted with Admire to do that and to do the implementation. The other thing we did with outside consultants was to hire search engine optimization people, because we really wanted to be sure that not only did we load this stuff, and I've done a lot of repository work over the years when I was in the commercial sector with many libraries around the world. And I know a lot of times content gets loaded in repositories and it tends to sit there. It doesn't see a lot of use unless you really are taking care of these kind of details around the edge, including the search engine optimization. So we hired some search engine optimization consultants and had them work with us as we planned the implementation of the repository to make sure that once it got in there, content would be crawled, widely found, indexed across Google and all the other places that we know searching happens. And those were the consultants we used to get this project off the ground.
Okay. What are the three main takeaways that you'd like to share with other institutions based on the success story?
Well, I think what we did with OU and OSU was really we cooperated on core infrastructure. And I always say that core infrastructure is a place where cooperation is certainly possible and even advantageous. You know, we wanted to make sure that we were able to add value where we could. And core infrastructure really isn't that place. You know, I kind of get amazed when people feel like they have to replicate all this stuff in their own shops. It doesn't make sense in today's environment. Given the funding issues that we're all facing and fighting and the capabilities that we have, we really have to focus on where can we add value. And so we looked at this together and we said, you know, as long as most of what we want to do can be shared, we put in place an MOU, which I think, you know, I mentioned at the beginning. But MOUs really have to be based on, do you really have shared goals? You know, are you trying to go to the same place? Do you have a vision for what services that is shared? Do you trust the other partner? You know, I mean, you can get lots of agreements. They're easy to form. They're much harder to break. So you want to be sure that you feel comfortable with the other organization, and we certainly did with OSU. There's some great people there, and we worked well with them. We wanted to be sure the rewards were shared. You know, I've been in lots of commercial arrangements where, you know, the rewards aren't necessarily shared evenly between all the players, and that's not a healthy MOU. So we put together that memorandum of understanding, making sure that we had quality around the table, that we all wanted to go to the same place, we had the same values, looking to do largely the same services. I mean, once you get above the core infrastructure, of course, you can do many different things for each institution, and we've started to do that, but that core has to be in place. If that's there, you have the basis for collaboration. You know, I think what we did, being the two largest university higher ed libraries in the state, was to try and put in place a system that could be used by any higher ed library in the state. We're not restricting it to just OU and OSU. We've offered repeatedly across the state. We've got conversations going with two or three other higher ed institutions and one museum that we would load their content in here as well. The name ShareOK obviously leveraged off of both the Share initiative that's going on nationally, and it also was, you know, OK being the state initials. We wanted to be clear, this is Oklahoma. This isn't just OU and OSU. So, you know, we had that collaboration in place. We wanted to make that infrastructure widely available, and I believe given the basic that we used here, that can be done. So, you know, we think that they should be used more frequently in higher ed. You know, they aren't necessarily forever, but they are certainly at the appropriate point in time. They make a lot of sense. They should be used. And finally, I think the thing I would like people to recognize is I believe the model we put in place is very replicable. You know, I think this can be done elsewhere, and should be. I think like this, these kind of initiatives are underpinnings for like digital preservation. And we all know digital preservation is a huge and costly task, and yet libraries are expected to do it. You know, we had, just a story in the last week of the FBI digitizing thousands of records, and they're gone. Obviously, they haven't done it right. It's one of those thankless jobs. You know, it's never thought about until you need that record, and it's not there. Then that's when people are going to turn to the library and say, well, where is it? So, you know, that's a very costly process because digital preservation is technically a very sophisticated job to get done. We're not going to do that each individually. We can't possibly afford to do that. So we have to be thinking about these kinds of repository structures as something that should be done collaboratively. And DPN and the AP Trust, I think, are all good answers that are developing out there and looking like that's a place we should go. But those are largely collaborative efforts. So, you know, I think these kinds of collaborations can be made to work. They're very satisfying for all the members. But, you know, you have to work at it. It's like a marriage. You know, you got to negotiate. You got to wiggle. And sometimes you got to give. But, you know, you make sure all the partners are happy and you keep things moving forward. And I think the end result is well worth it.
Great. What are the drawbacks of a committee-driven project versus a agile, good-enough-for-production kind of project?
Well, you know, I thought that was an interesting question because I don't think the two are mutually exclusive. You know, I think there's room for both in any project, and certainly there was in this one. I think what we have to realize is that committees, by their very composition, are put together usually to listen to multiple points of view. And certainly in higher ed, we have the dual governance structure, so there's a lot of players around the table that want to be heard and listened to. And so, you know, you have to do that. I think where most committees, the typical drawback is if they're not well run, they quickly bog down and can take a project right to its knees. But if you really manage the process well, I'm a huge fan of meeting management techniques. And there's really good basic techniques. You know, there's getting the agenda out ahead of time, making sure people understand what are the goals of the meeting, who are the designated players in the meeting, you know, who's the chair, who's the facilitator to make sure that the person who's sitting in the back making an ugly face at a comment gets heard, you know, say what you're thinking. Who's the timekeeper to make sure discussions are kept on track? I rotate those roles in every meeting so that everybody learns to do each job and appreciate what that job entails. And when you do that, you start to see a group come together much, much better and become more effective. You take minutes, you assign action items, there are due dates put on those things, and people are held to those due dates at the start of the next meeting. You read off the action items from the last meeting. Did that get done? Did that get done? So committees can be made to work really well, but I don't see a lot of people do it that way. And I think that's what becomes a problem with committees. So a lot of people think, oh, committee, oh my God, you know, we'll never get anything done. And that can be the result. But if you handle it right, you can actually get a lot done. And it's more effective in that you are hearing all those points of view, you're reacting to them, and you're making sure they get heard. And if you can't do what that person says, at least try and convey to them an understanding of why you can't do that. So at least they don't walk away grousing. Well, they might, but you know, hopefully you minimize that and becomes more effective. You know, we've got the agile technique, which says, you know, let's just go very fast. I think the agile technique is entirely applicable too. And this is why I say I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think a lot of times in higher ed, people want to strive for perfection. You know, perfection is the enemy of progress, is the quote, right? That's a good quote to keep in mind. You can't strive for perfection in today's environment. Everything changes too quickly. You have to be thinking and moving and responding to events as they occur. So agile is, to me, that's a stated goal going into a project in today's IT environment. We have to move quickly. We have to think about how do we build something that can respond to change as it goes and happens. And if we do that, then we're going to be more effective with our committee. Again, you have to have a group of people from around the campus on the committee. I think that's part of the problem I see in some committees is the composition isn't always thought through very well. Certainly when we did ours at OU and OSU, we had a wide representative around that panel. We had people from IT. We had people from customer experience, you know, how are they going to see this? We had the librarians there. We had the digital IT people there. We had the archivists there. You know, I mean, we had points of view from around the entire university on that panel and from OSU as well. And so we were making sure everybody was involved and that they had action items to go back and convey into their organization, things that were going to happen. You know, it gets to be a bit challenging, of course, when you're putting a digital repository in higher ed and you've got open access as a top item on your agenda. Lots of departments, I don't think, paid quite as much attention as they should have when we did this. And so, you know, once we started loading their dissertations in the repository and they found out they were open access, you know, there was initially some interesting moments with that, and we had to, you know, sit down and work our way through that, but we did, and I think now we've achieved a relatively happy state, or as happy as we can be. You know, the humanities crowd has slightly different needs than the scientific crowd, so it can be a bit challenging at times to make all those groups happy, but, you know, we've worked our way through that, and I think we're okay at the moment.
Could you talk a little bit about the future of this project?
What do you see? Yeah, you know, I think we've really got some, now that we have the infrastructure in place, I think we have some really neat things to do in the future. Of course, I mentioned preservation, which is certainly one of these things. We've, you know, the repository product we used is really a good, widely adopted product and has good, strong community support. Preservation is an issue where I think, given some of what we're dealing with, we may need a higher level of preservation services than we're going to be able to do with the product we've got in place. So we're currently evaluating other repository software to see if it might do this better. And we're trying to decide, you know, what is the best way to do preservation in the future. We'd like to get track certification on the repository. We believe that would give us some additional credibility with our users. And so we'll do that. And then we're looking at the AP Trust and DPN to see if that's the best way to move forward. Those are still fairly early stages, so I think there's much to be proven there yet, but certainly it's a possibility that we'll go in that track. We're also looking at doing the ORCID IDs across the campus right now. We've started an initiative to get all the graduate students as they enter grad school to sign up for ORCID IDs so we can begin to better track, you know, their work, and they can track it, and the university can see the impact we're having across the globe. You know, we keep reminding people, when you're sitting in the middle of a country like Oklahoma, one of the things I find sometimes is people aren't thinking outside of the borders of the state, much less the nation, but I keep reminding them, you know, as we move into the markets with China, the number of people that have the same name and why you have to disambiguate this name is really important, and they're going to have the same problem. So it's really, you know, even within the country, they can have that same problem given different names. So getting ORCID IDs out there is certainly important. We're about to implement the DMP data management plan tool from University of California. That's going to be going in shortly to help our researchers build their data management plans. We're moving into a lot more work with open educational resources. We've got an open education resource person hired and on staff, and they've been accumulating data. We're going to be entering more and more of that into the repository as we go forward to better support the open educational resource needs of our campus and faculty. We fired up OJS, the Open Journal software. So we, OSU had actually been leading in this initiative for quite a while. They had done this on their campus. We've now moved it onto the shared services system of OU and OSU. And so we're now starting to mount additional journals. We've got two or three in progress at OU right now, and I think two more might be added today. So, you know, this is growing very rapidly, open access journals. So that's very positive. And then one of the things that we're really trying to do, and it really builds on both the repository and our discovery system, is to try and create what we're calling a knowledge creation platform. And one of the things that seems rather obvious to me as we look out at the field is that our continuing battle to try and displace Google and related search services in the user's mind is not going to be victorious. We have to be thinking about where do we give additional value and how can we attract users and make them want to come and use the library's search interfaces. And I've been thinking for quite some time that one of the things we really need to do is streamline the life of the students and researchers and faculty in their creation of new knowledge. So I've been looking at us taking the repository and the existing discovery tool, which we can replace the entire interface on that product through the APIs in it, and build a new interface layer on top of that where people can access existing knowledge but start building new knowledge. Might be a research paper for a freshman, I don't care. Might be an experienced medical researcher. They all have a lot of the shared needs. I've got to access what's out there right now on this subject. Here's what I want to do. Can I reach in and get to data sets that I want to work with? Can I run different tests on those? Can I then capture that output? Can I capture my newly created data set and drop it right in the repository? Can I then start writing my journal article or research paper and stay in one interface? Can I do all that? And when I'm done, can I push it into open review? And once it's done and signed off, can I then push that paper into the repository and begin the next one? I think we can do all of that in one interface. There's enough open source software to do all those basic functions, so we could largely create a tool that I think would make the researcher's life so much better and consolidate and streamline that we could attract them and give them what they need to create new knowledge on a continuing basis. So that's this infrastructure that we put in place with the repository and the discovery interface are all part of that larger scheme of let's create something that really adds value for our end users in a way that they haven't had before and put it out there and make it available to them to use.
If there's one thing about if there's one thing that you're most passionate about when you think about the future and what you're doing, what would it be?
We signed an agreement with the Max Planck Institute to use their Edition Open Access software, which is really amazingly powerful software for taking items like special collection works, digitizing them, making them available on this platform, and then building new scholarly commentary and or translations around these works and putting it on a system that basically lets you create a book that contains all of this in one book that can be printed as a book anywhere in the world, print on demand, or it can be created as a PDF and shipped to you. And I guess one of the things I get most excited about that, of course, not only making all of the special collections we have at OU available, like Galileo's works with new commentary, but I just think it'll be so powerful when you look at a place like we have over 114 different countries represented on our campus. OSU, I think, has 100 different nationalities on their campus. If we can get those students excited about these works and helping us translate these works, to make some of these works available in their native languages for free to download, I just think that's incredibly powerful stuff. We can take materials and put it out there for people in the world that they would never, ever have a chance of seeing or touching these works or even understanding what they say if we didn't do something like this. I just think this one project is just incredibly interesting. I think it's empowering. I think it's higher ed at its best. That's a really neat project.
Carl Grant is Associate Dean of Knowledge Services and Chief Technology Officer for the University of Oklahoma. I'm Jerry Bain. Thanks for listening.